Halloween music, all during the show, courtesy of Ron Penn, former Chicagoan. This is Rick Cogan. The show is After Hours, and it is ever amazing to me in my lengthy life how certain things get buried by history's dust and stay buried. October 22nd, 1963, a quarter of a million people, most of them Chicago public school students, marched to protest segregation and inequality in the Chicago public schools. I dare say we could do it right now if we felt like it. In studio with me is my old friend Gordon Quinn of Chicago's Kartemkin Films, most famous for Hoop Dreams, but soon to be famous for some kind of Roger Ebert documentary that I have a starring, swearing role in, and Rachel Dixon, an associate producer. Hi.
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 Rachel, you've got a big event coming up. The film is not quite done. It's going to be broadcast on public television next year, but there's a big, big, big event termed The Lessons from the 63 Boycott. You are a youngster. What did you learn from learning about the 1963 boycott in doing this project?
Well, for starters, before I started working on this project, I didn't know that the 1963 boycott existed. And yeah. I think that a lot of people don't. I went to Chicago public schools. I didn't learn anything about it in my history classes. I really had no idea. And so I think that the thought that, 250,000 kids could stay home from school, they actually didn't all march. We think that it was around 20 or 30,000 who marched.
That's still a stunning event. And but I mean that by history bearing something like that.
I think that, the fact that 200,000 kids could not be in school, their parents could keep them out, or they could decide to be out in the organizing that goes into that, it's kind of remarkable for me because, I've known a little bit about what's going on with the school closings and stuff and, been looking at that. We're working on some documentary projects about that. And to me, the thought that that many people could stay home from school is really remarkable.
It's not just the organizing, I think. There's something else, Gordon Quinn, that goes into something like that. It's the passion and the anger. It's a combination of passion and anger, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, this was 50 years ago, 1963. The civil rights movement was, reaching an intense level. And I was a student at the University of Chicago. I really wasn't even I was interested in film, but we weren't really making films. And a couple people let us know about this thing. Al Raby,
sure.
And Don Rose sort of mentioned that this is going to be happening and it should be recorded. And we just got lucky. We had been hired by somebody to film an interview with Madame Pandit, who was head of UNESCO at that time, someone at the university. So we had this big sync sound camera. And we put it in a Volkswagen bus. It was too big to carry.
Yeah, sure.
All the interviews are shot out the door of an old Volkswagen bus.
That is a remarkable thing. And you were sitting on this film, waiting for the anniversary?
No, wasn't waiting. I've offered this film. I offered it to both series of Eyes on the Prize.
Uh-huh.
I've offered it to other people over the years, and no one ever took it. Eyes on the Prize decided not to deal with the 63 boycott. The only time it was ever used, shortly after we did it, they were making some kind of a documentary in Canada that dealt with Saul Alinsky, I think.
And sure, the great organizer in Chicago,
Yeah, for that. But it's just been there all those years. And, of course, about a year or so ago, I decided that I wanted to do something and get it finished. So now we're going to make this half-hour film. I wanted to have it done for the anniversary, but we don't need to go into the long, boring story about why it's
But let's go into the story of what, I was in public school at this time, Northside Public School, LaSalle. I heard about what were called the Willis Wagons.
Yeah.
Explain to me what the Willis Wagons were.
Well, the Willis Wagons were trailers that they were putting behind the overcrowded black schools, and they would put the kids in these trailers to try and deal with overcrowding because they did not want to move those kids into the adjacent white schools, mm-hmm. which were underutilized.
Yeah.
And so, the black community understood that that was Willis's job, to keep the schools segregated, and they wanted him and his wagons to go.
Yeah.
And I think it maybe also resonated. I went to segregated schools by law in Virginia. I came out here to go to the university and been here
sure.
ever since. But I think that because in the South they had, in the segregated schools, some of them had trailers. associated with them, and they weren't big enough. They wouldn't build a new school. They just put these kids in the trailers. And that may be part of the reason why it was such a hot-button issue for people.
Who were the leaders of this? Rachel Dixon, you're the heading the research, and especially I'll talk more at length about this Tuesday gathering at the DuSable Museum. But who did you find spurred this thing here? Because even at the time, there was activism, big activism in the South, not so much in the North. I mean, blacks had been beaten up here, the Black Belt, where they couldn't move. They were sort of beaten up. Who helped inspire this outrage?
Well, I think that that's a complicated question, and I think you know,
that's
we've
what I'm that's what I'm known for. There are no easy answers on this.
A little
show.
Bit, you know. I think it's. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't alive 50 years ago.
Right.
And we know that Rosie Simpson was very involved. She was a parent leader and organizer. We know that Lawrence Landry was very involved as well. But it also kind of, you know, memory is selective, and it depends a little on who you ask. And I think the short answer to that is that to plan a boycott where 250,000 kids stay out of school, it wasn't just one or two people.
No. It's got, again, this incredible ripple effect I keep talking about.
I think that one of the things that we've seen as we've sort of dug into this, originally what I was looking for and what we're still looking for was the actual students. And we have found some. This project is actually web-driven, and we have a website 63boycott.com,
easy,
where we have 500 pictures posted, taken from the footage. And it's kind of like Facebook. Here I am talking
sure,
about Facebook. But
sure.
You want people
to
can
look
click
and see
on
that's
it.
Me. When
that's
I was...
me. They can give us their information
oh,
or
fabulous.
Identify somebody else, because we want to find the kids who actually walked out. And we have been uncovering the organizers. I think we know that some of the Friends of SNCC was an organization
mm-hmm.
that was involved,
mm-hmm.
and there were other CORE was involved.
Sure.
And, you know, organizations that were involved in the civil rights movement were involved. And being in Chicago, I remember, you know, as a college kid, there was a lot going on in Chicago around civil rights. Much of it was supporting what was going on in the South, but people were also fighting about battles here.
Yeah, no question. Let's take a little break and continue on with Gordon Quinn and Rachel Dixon talking about a film you will not really be able to see until on PBS next year at 63 Boycott, but there's a celebration of the event itself, 250,000 people walking around the city of Chicago enraged by the public school system in Chicago, and I think there's a huge, huge echo these days. We'll be right back. On Tuesday, it would be October 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m. at the wonderful DuSable Museum of African American History, a place that not enough people have visited. It's at 740 East 56th Place. There is free, open to the public, screening of a work in progress called 63 Boycott, which examines October 22nd, 1963, when 250,000 people marched in outrage about the way blacks were treated in the Chicago public school system. Rachel Dixon is the organizer of this event. Gordon Quinn is heads Kartemkin Films. They're responsible for this. This film is going to have, I don't know if it's an echo that it has, it's going to echo loudly given the current state of affairs with the Chicago public school system, don't you think, Gordon?
Yeah, I think it obviously will. I mean, they've just closed 50 schools back then. You know, the rhetoric even echoes. The whole idea, you know, the trailers, and it was like, you know, oh, this is being done for the good of the children, you know. They always have an excuse for what's going on. I think about it now, you know, they're closing these schools so because they're, quote, underutilized. And they're going to put them in these other schools, and then
welcoming
the class,
schools.
Yeah,
the rhetoric
schools,
is a little
it's
more.
It's all this
yeah.
rhetoric, but and it's like I was reading. What is the class size going to be? 38 or 39? And I remember years ago when California passed some kind of, you know, one of their initiatives, and the class size. This is of course gone today, but
yeah.
they were going to limit the class sizes to 25
mm-hmm.
because everyone knows that nothing is more important than class size in terms of good teaching.
I agree. I also agree that nothing is as important in schools as art, music, the arts. It's not all about testing.
It's you know that it's important because you look at any elite school, and that's at the heart of it.
Sure.
Because it's not just about the art. It's about how you understand all the other things that are going on.
The components of life. The components of life. You know, I'm not saying that everybody should become a filmmaker or a writer, but you should certainly know about film and certainly know about writing and certainly have the chance to paint a picture. There's a quote from the film that resonates. One of the participants who was in the boycott, a man named Bob Lucas, says the education in Chicago today in the black community is as bad now as it was then. I'm sure you will get some people at this event Tuesday saying it's worse. Who's going to be at this? Karen Lewis, I know person I admire greatly, the head of the Chicago Teachers Union, will be there. Who else is going to be at this event? You're going to screen about 20 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll screen the 20-minute work in progress. And so Karen Lewis is one of the people who will be on the panel. We're also going to have Rosie Simpson, who was one of the parent organizers and the leader of the boycott. Fanny Rushing, she was also a student organizer of the boycott, field secretary of SNCC, the Students' Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. We'll also have Elizabeth Todd Berland. She's a historian at UIC who's kind of focused her research on the civil rights in Chicago in the 60s civil rights movement, especially around education. And then Jason Perez of Black Youth Project. He's a youth organizer, and he dropped out of high school, was incarcerated for a while, and now has gone on to be on a national level an organizer.
Also, you have this website, too, 63boycott.com, where Gordon and Rachel and the people at Kartemkin are asking you to go on there and find yourself as a child. And on one level, that's a fun activity for someone now, you know, in their late 50s or early 60s, to find themselves as a kid, but to also become part of this film, too. I would love to hear what these people say. It occurs to me, Gordon and Rachel, that we don't really learn the lessons of the past, do we? It's depressing.
It is. But on the other hand, one of the things that I have, you know, it's what I see for the future to this. I hope it to be a short film, like a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Would like to get it into the schools. But also, we want the website to live on as a kind of resource and place for people who participated in this boycott, and then to get them into the schools to talk, you know, how, as elders in the community,
sure,
to talk about their experiences, to talk about their view. And one of the people that we interviewed, Ralph Davis, he actually, you know, he said, oh, yeah, I go into the schools and talk sometimes. He's a guy who started his own business and has done things. And I think there's a real interest in that. You know, the boycott came out of parents having a sense of what their kids needed. And I think that's just as true today.
No question.
The Tribune had that incredible piece last week
about the number of kids who weren't missing. They didn't go.
They didn't go to the welcoming schools. Their parents have made other kinds of choices for them because they have a real sense of what's in the best interest for their kids. Some of them went to charter schools. Some of them went to Catholic schools.
Some of them
went to other schools, CPS schools, but
and
just
some
not
of them,
the one.
Sadly, and some of them sadly went nowhere.
That's true too. I think that, you know, it's like one of the places to start, and it's where the boycott started, is understanding that parents have a tremendous passion and interest in what's going to happen for their kids, and so you want to involve them in the schools. Not that they won't make some mistakes, but they are the ones that you want to get in that forefront of caring about schools. Parents and teachers, they're the ones that care the most.
No question. No question. It's a way of coalescing. You know, this teachers union has shown a certain amount of effective muscle, but that still couldn't stop the closure of 50 schools. And to what I think that did, it disenfranchised already disenfranchised neighborhoods. Some of these neighborhoods where schools closed, there's nothing else there. You know, the churches have closed. There are no stores. There's no commercial avenue. I think this is a terribly important film. You can see see it as a work in progress. You can also become part of it if you go to 63boycott.com and find yourself or a friend of yours. If you were part of it and you don't see yourself at 11 years old, you'll find a friend. And you can enlighten, I think, to use this film to enlighten and empower the kids and parents who are going through this now, I think might be the great value of this. Rachel, you're nodding your head, Rachel Dixon. That's your hope too, is it not?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that even, you know, the pictures, there are 500 pictures, but I don't think 500 pictures capture all the people who are there. So even the people who weren't there, you know, I think the stories and lessons that they have to teach us today are really exciting. And I think the more that we can uncover them and unbury the past, the more we can learn.
And Gordon Quinn, what an unbelievably serendipitous thing it was that in 1963 you got a call from someone to get out a huge camera and, like, do your thing.
And cover it, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there were a few key people that knew this was going to be big and be important. Don Rose, I'm sure.
Sure,
you know.
A great friend.
And Al Raby were the two people I was closest involved with. And we actually, back at that time, we edited a little 10-minute piece. You know, the sound was separate on a recorder, but I would go around with Al to these various meetings with the CCO. It was kind of a coalition that came out of the boycott. And we would show this little 10-minute clip from that footage. So it already had some use back in the day. And the other thing is we've been interviewing, you know, some of the leadership and people. And, you know, people are getting on. Bob Lucas died, and I was really happy that I got the interview with him about it before he passed away.
I just think this could have a big impact, especially Tuesday night and on from there. You can get all the – go to 63boycott.com. We'll give you all the information you need. You can also go to Eventbrite, 63boycott.eventbrite.com, to register for this free screening and conversation on Tuesday night. Rachel Dixon, you're hooked up with some very, very good people, and they do important work. And Gordon Quinn, you know my – level of admiration for you is about as high as it gets. I can't wait for the Roger Ebert documentary that is soon to be coming from Kartemkin. You know, if it becomes more popular than Hoop Dreams, I'll be stunned, but Roger was indeed an interesting guy, and working with your colleague Steve James has been a joy, just a joy. Courtney will have all the information on the website if you don't have a pen nearby. This is a very important thing because it echoes into contemporary Chicago and the ills and perhaps even ways to make it better. We'll be right back.